On to item eight, educational presentation on the Ralph M. Brown Act, open meetings law. Karen, your name's on the slide deck. I assume you'll be taking the lead here.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Could you please make me the presenter so I can share the slides? Thank you.
Thanks, Harvey. I assume you're not staying for this, so see you later.
So good afternoon. I have up on the screen the slide deck that is included in today's agenda packet, and we'll go over some of the main rules from the Ralph M. Brown Act, which governs the open meeting laws in California for local legislative bodies. And this law is what applies to CICERA and its Board of Retirement as it conducts its public meetings. On slide three, we talk about the purpose of the Brown Act, and that is to ensure that agency actions are taken openly and that agency deliberations are conducted openly as well. The key concepts of the Brown Act are found on slide number four. The meetings of the Board of Retirement must be open and accessible to the public. A board meeting agenda must be posted publicly. And during board meetings, the public must be given an opportunity to comment. Next, on slide five, we talk about the definition of a meeting under the Brown Act. And a meeting means any congregation of a majority of the retirement board. For this board, that means five trustees at the same place and location, including teleconference locations, to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item within the retirement board's subject matter jurisdiction. On the next slide, slide number six, we also talk about meetings that may not be in the same exact location physically, but using perhaps technological devices or you know, texts, things like that, discussion among five or more members of the board via these means also constitutes a meeting. And there is a prohibition against having such a meeting without allowing the public to be there and witness the deliberations, and also provide advance notice via an agenda of the meeting and what is going to be discussed. So one example of an unlawful meeting would be, for example, a trustee emails another trustee about a retirement board issue, then that second trustee emails the same thing to a third, and then the fourth, and then a fifth trustee, and you have a chain of emails among five trustees. That is unlawful because the public wasn't around. The public wasn't allowed to witness these deliberations and didn't get prior notice about this happening. So the proper way of doing it is adding the item onto an agenda and providing that to the public, and then having this discussion that occurred via email be conducted openly during a noticed board meeting. So slide number seven addresses committee meetings, and the board does have the ability to establish subcommittees to handle a variety of business matters. For CICERA, for example, there is a standing audit committee that meets periodically, and the Brown Act does apply to that, meaning that the audit committee and any other committee that is a standing committee of the board is subject to the Brown Act, has to post an agenda ahead of time and hold a public meeting. The exception to that rule is an ad hoc type committee that is advisory, not a standing committee, that is convened for a limited purpose and for limited duration. Those types of committees are not subject to the Brown Act, and so they do not have to follow the public meeting laws. Let me pause here and see if there's any questions. Hearing none, I'll move on to slide number 8. Attendance at conferences. The attendance of a majority of the board members is allowed at a conference or a similar gathering that is open to the public. So that is key. The conference has to be open to the public. It doesn't necessarily have to be free. They could charge a fee for attendance, but it has to be open to the public. The trustees can attend, but there is a prohibition against discussing among themselves business that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the retirement board. So an example would be the SACRS conference, the State Association of County Retirement Systems, because to the extent that conference is open to the public, the trustees, as many as trustees want to go, can go without violating the Brown Act. And again, they need to be careful not to have discussion among themselves about a CSERA business item. Same goes for social events. The attendance of those is allowed, and again, no discussion of business items should occur. On slide 10, there's a addition in the law regarding social media. This was added by AB 992, and it's effective this year. And this is a specific provision regarding participation in social media. And it does state that the trustees are allowed to participate in social media, but a majority of the members do not discuss among themselves business of a specific nature that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of CSERA. On slide 11, that's another new law regarding open meetings, and it has to do with the current state of emergency due to COVID-19. With regard to holding the meeting, as you know, we used to have physical meetings, in-person meetings, where everyone had to attend personally, and there was an exception that allowed teleconferencing with some limitations. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the emergency situation that we're in, some of the Brown Act limitations have been lifted temporarily to allow us to meet just like we are today, telephonically. And there is no requirement for folks to be physically in person together in one place. So that occurred in March of 2020 via executive orders that were issued by the governor, and they temporarily changed some of the Brown Act requirements and waived them so that we can continue, the board can continue to conduct its business remotely. Still, with this, with the lifting of some of the limitations that were in the Brown Act, there still has to be notice to the public, and the public has to be granted access so they can observe, listen to the board meeting. And another condition is that all votes that are taken during a teleconference meeting, such as the one we're having today, must be taken by roll call so that the public can hear exactly how each trustee voted on each action item.
Karen, is there an end date to that waiver?
There is no end date at this point. When it ends, we'll have, I assume, another executive order that states that this executive order is superseded or terminated. So the rules that we're operating under now are in effect indefinitely.
And from the county standpoint, from sort of the county health aspect, we're trying not to encourage gathering of people, even though, for example, our board could do so safely, so with masks and all the rest. So I think we're anticipating from the county's level, the state will continue this until, in essence, the state is comfortable saying you can have as large a group gathering indoors as you need to. Just it's such a paramount safety issue.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd be willing to bet that, like the workplace, they're going to allow this or some form of this to be a supplemental policy following COVID.
Well, and to your point, Jen, I don't mean to usurp your presentation, Karen. There's much greater public participation when we do things remotely, and we have the ability to bring in the public to view a meeting this way and provide live comment. And so there is some desire by elected officials to have some sort of a hybrid model where you could have people interacting this way, and even, you know, board members remotely if needed. But yeah, I don't see this changing anytime till we feel like we have full vaccination. So probably this fall, I'm guessing. It's assuming, knocking on wood, that we get this far with our vaccinations.
Yes, and Candace, to your point, there have been a lot of innovations and improvement of processes in different realms, including this one, holding public meetings, because of us needing to do it differently. And technologically, in many aspects, I think some of these improvements will be adopted permanently. It remains to be seen what of the Brown Act changes will be implemented permanently. And, you know, we can go back to the way it was before once everything is normalized, but we'll see what the lawmakers would like us to do. For now, we're following the COVID-19 layout that we have for how to hold a meeting, and generally trying to make sure that we are still allowing the public to have prior notice of the meeting and how to participate in it, and of course, allow public comment. So with that, let's move on to specifically the agenda requirement in the Brown Act. That's on page 14 of the slides. At least 72 hours before a regular meeting, an agenda has to be posted. The agenda has to specify the items of business to be discussed, and the time and location of the meeting has to be posted. Of course, nowadays we're posting the exact telephone number and access code that needs to be put in for the members of the public to participate. And as of 2019, also the agency website has to have a link to the agenda that is a very prominent link from their initial homepage, so that the public can easily access the agenda and not have to jump through hoops to get to it. Now, if an item is not on the agenda, generally the board cannot discuss it. However, the board can briefly ask a question or ask staff to make a brief report regarding an item that is not on the agenda. In addition, for items that are not on the agenda, there are some exceptions that allow an actual discussion and even an action on the item, but there has to be a determination by the board by two-thirds vote that there's a need to take immediate action, and that the need for action came to the attention of CICERA subsequent to the agenda being posted. This happens very rarely, but it does allow the flexibility to address something that is urgent and that wasn't known when the agenda was posted. On slide number 17, we talk about public comment, allowing public comment. Now with the COVID-19 process, we are holding our meetings telephonically, and members of the public are able to call in and listen and also address the board via public comment as well. The Brown Act also covers situations of disruptive attendees. On slide 18, we have a summary of that. Generally, public comment has to be allowed, including negative comments. However, if a member of the public is being disruptive and is posing a situation where the board can't really continue to conduct business, then the board can exclude those members from the meeting and ask them to stay away.
Karen?
Okay, yes.
How does our chair do that if the disruptive individual won't leave?
In a situation where we're in person, we would have to have the member of the public removed, perhaps by a security guard or police. In a situation that is virtual, like today's meeting, they would not be able to disrupt the meeting, really, unless they're maybe doing some sort of a Zoom bombing. And hopefully our IT folks can address that right away.
And if I can, we've had to do that with the Board of Supervisors. And what we do is we exit the room, and then we have sheriff deputies who clear the entire room, and then only admit those back in who are willing to follow the rules. And I hope we never have that at Cicero, but it has happened.
Many years ago, when I just started, we had a case that clearly had that potential. And as a practical matter, those being most disruptive were in civilian clothes, deputy sheriffs. So.
Yes. Well, so far we haven't had the need to implement this. So let's hope that it stays that way. Okay, moving on to slide 19, closed session. So up until now, we talked about open session and the public being in attendance, but the Brown Act does allow closed sessions on items that are specifically enumerated in the Brown Act. For example, if the board is to consider the purchase or sale of a particular specific pension fund investment, that can be done in closed session. Personnel matters, including disability applications, can be handled in closed session. Cicera is one of the systems that does handle disability items in closed session. Out of the 20 SURL systems, I think most do, but there are a few that handle those types of disability application issues in open session. Additionally, on slide 20, the board is allowed under the Brown Act to confer in closed session with Cicera's designated representatives regarding employee salaries and benefits. However, any final action on those has to be done in open session. It cannot be done in closed session. And so the transparency rule kicks in here so that if the board is changing someone's salaries and benefits, that has to be done in open session. The public will have advance notice of that being on the agenda and an opportunity to comment on it before it happens. And the Brown Act also allows the board to confer in closed session with its legal counsel regarding pending litigation or exposure to litigation against the retirement system or the board, and also to decide whether to initiate litigation. All of those can be handled in closed session under the Brown Act. After a closed session item is being addressed and action is taken, the Brown Act does tell us what public report has to be made to the public and when. And so, for example, with disability applications, those are handled in closed session. But in open session, subsequent to the closed session, the board chair will provide a report to the public regarding the decision and each board member's vote. When it comes to deciding in closed session to sell or purchase a particular pension fund investment, the public report on that item, the timing of that is after the investment deal closes. So there is no requirement to make that report on the same day as the decision. Next, on slide 22, confidentiality. With the Brown Act and holding closed sessions, board members may not disclose confidential information acquired by being present in a closed session to any person not entitled to receive the information. So all of those discussions and actions remain confidential by law. And the consequences of violating the Brown Act are criminal liability for individual board members who may have violated the act. And there are civil remedies. There are civil actions by the challengers to stop, prevent, or invalidate the action of the board. And that's mostly what I've seen from case law regarding the Brown Act. It's usually a civil remedy that is being ordered by the court. And essentially, if the court finds that the agency violated the Brown Act, then the action that the board took in violation of the Brown Act is invalidated. And lastly, attorney fees and costs could be awarded to the plaintiff. So if the plaintiff wins the case and the court agrees that the agency violated the Brown Act, then the plaintiff's attorney fees and costs incurred in bringing the litigation against the agency are awarded to the plaintiff. Are there any questions? Okay, well, thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Great. Thank you so much, Karen.